You know, I think I wasn't on this program originally, but then at the last minute was asked, you know, can you talk? So if you remember, you saw the first schedule, I wasn't on there. And I said, oh, I'm doing a meeting right after this. So I'll just use the same talk, except for that things kind of got changed a little bit. There was something that Heiner Boeing said that I said, oh, wow, I have to add that in. And so Heiner said, and I should have marked it here, the technologies are business-driven and not scientific-driven. And I have a real good example of that. Also, Heiner said, and this was really, Google can do this. We should just have Google do this. So I want to share with you, this is a true story. So this was an article that came out June 4, 2015, IM2 Calorie. This was the Google team working on identifying foods and estimating energy. And I don't know about you, but we were absolutely thrilled. Because imagine if Google is in this whole thing. I mean, this is just fabulous. And so Kevin Murphy, he was the key leader of this group. They had about 10 to 15, we're not talking about postdocs, they had real engineers that were graduated, you know, working at Google. And so then they had this great paper that we read and we were all excited about. They called it IM2 Calories. And so we were just thrilled. Now, my colleagues work with individuals at Google, so they got in touch with Kevin because they were going there for another meeting with a project they have going on there. And we are just, oh, we're so excited. And we get in there, and do you know what they told us? This is too hard. We're giving you everything, and have at it. So we might be able to depend on Google once we are just so close to being pretty perfect, because industry can only invest so much. They have a bottom line, and fortuitously, us at public institutions, I have tenure. I mean, I can sit around for the rest of my life and I'll still get paid. But, you know, thankfully, we want to do something with that. And so that's why we're still chugging away. We did get a lot of information from them and it was useful. But we really can't depend on Google. So I don't want to burst your bubbles on that one. And then we did get a lot of really good information. The next one is, this came up from Christine. And she suggested, you know, using the National Survey. And it actually is a really good resource using national surveys. And this is some of our work working with temporal dietary patterns. And what's interesting here, now, the temporal patterns are complex, and we're going across a 24-hour day. So this particular image right here is just depicting the second largest daily consumption event, which is usually around noontime. But notice those two big peaks, and those were those big peaks that with the other work that you had shown was France, you know, tended to be the French. But here now, these are just all folks from the United States. Now, but that largest peak there, which has one has the diamonds and one has the triangle, they actually have the least healthy diets. And so it's just kind of interesting that what's interesting is the pattern that has the healthiest diet is the pattern that has a consistent intake at each what we consider traditional eating periods of the day. So this paper is available along with some others that are available that we've done this temporal dietary patterns. But I think it's fascinating that the United States may look completely different than the European eating pattern with regard to health. So now getting to the main part is there's an app for that. So this is something that you must always face because people probably say, why are you doing this? There's an app for that. And so then you say, oh, you know, we're trying to do something special, something that we're really trying to make sure it's science-based. And to give an example with regard to the food world, the popular apps, one of the things that they really brag about is how many foods they have. And so here's some examples. We have 7 million foods, all the way down this My Food Diary. they're squeaking by with only 70,000. Now, the food composition data is very difficult to put together, and we use as a reference in the United States, we use our United States Department of Agriculture, and for looking at, when we're doing surveys, we use the Food Nutrition FNDDS, Food Nutrition for Dietary Studies. And so here's how many foods they have in their databases, and these have been all curated now. So that's what we have with regard to being fully evidence-based with foods. So we can kind of sort of see why we maybe don't have the same goals. And indeed, really there's been literature of reviewing the popular apps and how they compare to evidence-based, because that's what we're looking for. We're trying to make evidence-based apps. And so these are manuscripts specifically reviewing, and here's some of their conclusions. There are obvious gaps between the evidence-based recommendations and functionality, and there's insufficient evidence really behind what these apps or the popular apps are delivering. And so definitely research is needed in order to make apps become what we would consider based in science. And the other thing has to do with ratings. So what's big in the app world is what the rating is you get. You know, like all the little happy faces, your happy faces, and definitely the ratings of the app have nothing to do with the quality or the quality of the content of the app. So unlike commercial health apps, if you're doing something for a health system, there are specific standards you have to follow. So even though you and I aren't making one specifically for health systems, it is a vision that one day we might be in a health system. So we have a whole different criteria. So the bottom line is, yes, there's an app for that, but it may not have the quality that we would want to use for research. So now, where with regard to collecting diet have things gone since we all last met? And so now we're really looking at different approaches, because now on the scene, or starting to become on the scene, are passive approaches of collecting dietary information along with active approaches. So they have little pros and cons. So the passive is some kind of wearable device, like I maybe could have something right here. And then you collect a lot of images. So you collect a lot of information that you don't even really need. Whereas with the mobile device, it's very specific. Everything that you collect, it's something you can use and need. So and if it's truly passive, then the user doesn't need to be engaged. But with an app such on an iPhone or on any kind of mobile device, they have to initiate the process. Now, the quality of the images taken with a single image, 10 times better, many times better than what you get with a passive device. So sort of to think of it is, here's the passive approach. So you get about one image every 5 seconds. And so you can get up to 400,000 images a day. And most of them have nothing to do with what the person was eating. And then the active approach, 6 to 12 images if you're having a before or after. And those are all zeroed in. So here are the images with the passive approach. 24 minutes of time has passed. Here are the images with the active approach. 24 hours have passed. And so right away, you can start looking at your data and analyzing your data. And now in this case, these are just the before images, so appreciate that you also have an after image following with these two. So if we look at just one eating occasion, so with the passive method, this is 35 images from approximately 180 images that were captured over a 15-minute eating occasion. And then these need to be reconstructed together. And then here's the active approach, the before and after, so the single eating occasion. So the way now that we're sort of thinking of these coming together is, so then we have, we have image-based, which means everything is done with the images, or image-assisted, because the passive methods may be very useful, most useful right now with the image-assisted methods. So to think of what this looks like, so this, I'll take you through an image-assisted 24-hour dietary recall. But this is with the passive method, so not with, I think I did this wrong because I have it on passive, but it should be an active data collection. So what happens with doing a traditional method and then complementing with images? Here is a dietitian interviewing an enthusiastic adolescent into doing a 24-hour dietary recall. And so then, after probing, then she is this. She tries to use cute words to make him look up or anything. But he has taken these images. So then you can actually use those images to help complement and help with doing your prompts and probes for the 24-hour dietary recall. And then this, we can also do image-based that's 100% images, and that's what we're striving to be able to achieve. And so in this case, here's a young man, and he is proud that he's been able to take his images. And this was Stefan on the way back last night from here. He says, well, gee, Carol, why don't you just show your pictures, show your presentation from last time? You know, we won't notice. This picture right here, this darling boy, was shown last time. And so you can see I put in little markers if it was a picture from last time. Thank you for the idea. So moving on then, what we realize now is this is just to give you, I'm not going to go through all this, but just gives you an idea of how all these methods are being blended now. And so you have passive, you have active, you have different combinations, and if you follow through all of these, you can see all the different ways that people now are thinking of integrating images, integrating in traditional methods, and putting them all together. And so this is, so now it's really an open book as to really defining and describing the method, and because it can be any combination. So to look at the passive world, since this now is just burgeoning and starting, I'll show you two studies from the passive world. And this was a lightweight wearable camera, but they were using it as assisting with a dietary record. So this is what the item looks like, and it goes over the ear and actually can turn on automatically if all goes well. And so they use 6 university-based volunteers. So that means people like you and me. And they did 3 days of wearing the camera, but they did 14 days of written dietary records. And here are the results. So they used doubly labeled water. Doubly labeled water came up yesterday. And so the white bar is our reference, doubly labeled water. So we want to have that estimate of energy reach that white bar. So the gray bar is 14 days of doing a food diary, so 14 days of writing. The blue bar is when the days when they did the 2-day diary with the device on their ear. A little bit of reactivity there. Speaking of reactivity, I think it came up yesterday. But on the good side, they did get a little bit more information from the video, and that's why the purple line is just a little bit higher. So when they asked them about their using the device, they said it was basically easy to use, kind of neutral, but would not be comfortable wearing it in public, and it affected activities. So we think, okay, passive, not good. Let's go to another example, though. So in its current form, this one introduced bias. But now another passive method. This is a wearable camera, and it's this. Maybe some of you know the SenseCam. It was developed for actually working with individuals with autism, and it's runs as a video camera. And this is how it looks when you wear it. It's like a piece of jewelry. So in this case, Geming, what he did was had people wear this the day before the 24-hour recall, and then when the person came in to do the 24-hour recall, they completed the 24-hour recall, and then sorted through all the images. There are apps to sort through the images and widow them down. It does take time. But then they found some missing things. So as, and then also he used doubly labeled water, 20 men and women, and then they did 3 24-hour dietary recalls. And in this case, the images from the sense cam actually helped enormously. And the people were not as embarrassed wearing this as wearing something over their ear. And so you can see that TEE here means total energy expenditure, and that DLW is doubly labeled water. But when from just the recall, it was 17% below total energy expenditure, and it moved to 9%. And then for the women, it was 13% and moved to 8%. So it added some significant additional information. So what an open question is at this point, and as individuals proceed in this area, is what makes the bias greater with these passive methods as to how they look and if you get it blended in or not to you, I think, how you usually look every day. So now with the active methods, this is the one that you've already gone over because this is the one that we have been working on. And Britta showed this picture actually the other day in her slides. So that's great. So I don't have to even go over it. But with most of the active methods, the idea is to make capturing the images as easy as possible. So we recommend it being right on the front screen, and so individual can activate the button right away. Since last time I was here, we have added an additional button. The protest was just too strong over time. And so now we have the after eating button if you ate at all. And it's worked out fine. It may seem like an easy change, but there's some issues with the back end web app, you know, as to how these images come up. But we've now dealt with that. And then when you're using a single image, if any of you missed last time, it's just critical that it be taken well. And so there are these little guide bars that can help you with knowing when the angle is correct. And that's critical in order to do volume estimation. And then with these methods, we still are not at the point that we can 100% identify the exact food. We identify up to 4 foods that we think are best matches. So when the individual at the end of the day looks at the images, then these little pins that are on there, so if we take that one that is milk, they'll highlight that, they'll tap on that pin, and then this window will open up, and so they can remove the pin, they can confirm that it's milk, or they can identify it as one of the other foods. So that's confirming, or then they can actually say, no, that isn't it, and scroll through the foods. And at this point in time, this is about the best that it gets. And imitation is a best form of flattery. This group right here, that's a mix between it's mostly a commercial group. They have an app that you can get on the in the App Store, or also in the Android too. And so it's what they've been able to do is that they can identify one food at a time. And then down at the bottom, you can see they have 5 choices. Now, when you identify that food, they make it clear that they want you to put it on a white, you see, on a white type napkin. You know, it's because you're controlling the background then. And I can tell you the engineers we work with, they wanted the same thing too. But that's just not acceptable. So with regard to we've actually done doubly labeled water with this app, and this is the paper if you want to go and look at it. And it was dosing over 7.5 days and 45 men and women. And so these are the results. And as you can, what you can see here is that the women, so then it was the overall energy was 90% below, and the men it was 88% below. And you go, oh, well, maybe that's really bad. But in the United States, our premier reference that Christine brought up yesterday. Usually in every country, your premier reference is your national survey system. They've done doubly labeled water, and this is where they hit. So what they do is a 24-hour dietary recall. They do it two times, and it's by interview. So what we have is that a little bit different, though, because these individuals, they took images for 7 days. So we have this. So this is represents 7 days. So I say, okay, good. So we're as good as what is called the premier standard in the United States. And then if you recall the fiducial marker, this is just absolutely critical because, for one thing, it allows you to reset all the colors. Because if these various images that you see up here will even be different if I showed you the fiducial marker. No projection does color the same way, even if it's the best, the absolute best. And so this references us to the color, and color is the primary feature to identify food. And then it's also allows us to do real-time checking of the do we need to ask them to retake the picture, because we can right away know if it's blurry or not because of that fiducial marker. So this is data from a study of 240 men and women, and you can see the number of images that were collected over 4 days total. And out of all those images, only 2% did not contain the fiducial marker. People have said, do you want to get rid of the fiducial marker? When the participants tell us so, we will start thinking to plan B. But right now, the participants like the fiducial marker more than the app. So we're sticking with using the fiducial marker. Now, some other things having to do with identifying food. And some people give us this great suggestion of, there's pictures of food all over the place. Just go out and train. Because to be able to train, you need to train to thousands and thousands and thousands of images. And those of you on the other side of the coin with this project, you recognize that how much it takes to train. Well, if you see here, this is lasagna taken by a real person. This is lasagna from all those images that are on the internet. Most of the images on the internet, we put up our best, and we actually even will even do tweaking with it. Like, this has had some highlighting added to it. And so you can't train to this. If you train to the most ideal image, you will not be able to identify images in the wild. And we discovered that actually in our very first project. We're getting ready to bring in our first group of people in a controlled feeding situation. And we got out all of these big lights and everything, took all the most perfect pictures you've ever seen in the world. And then we trained to them, and we were just hotter than, wow, this is so great. We got our first images from real people, and we couldn't identify anything. So it's really important that you try to get real live pictures. And so what we have kind of an interesting Mechanical Turk thing set up right now of trying to have people just quickly look through and find the real pictures as opposed to the stylized pictures. Then the other thing we continue to need forward on is estimating the amount, because that's also a bit of a challenge. But if you look along these columns, were our first attempts in 2002 and then our first major upgrade in 2015. The neat thing about images, you can keep using them again as your test, after you've tried to improve things. And so you can see that for some of the things we did improve and some remained the same and some even got worse. The advantage of course, something that's mechanized is that you can actually use the original algorithm. And so for many of the things we've improved. So now, to move on really quickly, since that was my belt that I don't have very much time left, is where it's give you some ideas to what the passive world is like. And this is a device that Edward Sazonov, and it's glasses. So if you wear glasses, you can use your own, or this particular pair has none in it. And then you can put the device on the rim of the glass. And these are some of the signals, piezoelectric signals. And so you can see a person at rest, they're eating while at rest, they're talking, they're eating while walking, they're walking. And then this is one of his new prototypes. And we're going to start working with this. I'll be real interested to see what happens, about wearing something this. I hope he can fix it up just a little bit more. But notice that the graduate students, they're really happy to wear it. So here's one of the doctoral students, just happy as a clam with this thing on and looking down at his plate of food. So we'll have to see how that works in, when we give it to real people. But we really think we have to start to explore, because one day will come when these really will be, small things that we can put on either on glasses or behind a person's ear, something that it won't be so obvious. Now, the one issue that occurs, though, is that these images are very poor images still. And so anyone right now who's collected passively, they cannot identify the foods. And this is why we're going to start working with these folks to see what we can do to try to identify the foods. We're not sure if that can be done. This I wasn't planning on showing you, so don't think I was. I just didn't change my presentation except for that beginning to add the things that I was inspired by from our conversations. So I want to acknowledge my colleagues. And notice, there's someone from Potsdam there. So what a young woman came and worked with us for some time from the Potsdam Institute, and she was fantastic. And so I want to thank you all, and we might have time for a few questions.
Wondering, so the last device you were showing, the glasses, I think that's really exciting in a way, but I was kind of wondering, because you were saying the device attached to the ear, that people didn't like that. So I was kind of wondering, do you think that the glasses will be really an improvement, or will we see the same effect?
I'm not sure. They have had small groups of people use this, and also very selective people. But we never work with selected people, so we'll find out.
Yeah.
We're really careful about recruiting outside of the university atmosphere.
You may have mentioned it, but the piezoelectric signal, where you could distinguish between resting, walking, and eating, that's like really related to the jaw movement?
Yeah, it's also, that's where Edward is picking it up from us. Yeah.
Okay, because that would enormously help to narrow down when there is a food picture.
Right, and exactly. So actually, what that is exactly happens, and I didn't make that clear, is that's what turns it on. Turns on his device with the video camera. What does occur, though, is, and this is true if you look at some of the others, they do not get small items. Because it gets the signal, and then it turns on, and something can already be eaten.
Mm-hmm.
So you see an empty spot on the plate. So that, but in time, that was speed up too.
No, I was just thinking, because with that kind of technology, you could also get information about the speed of eating, and that's something really interesting.
And exactly, when it starts and when it stops. There's a lot of information that you get from that.
That's clever.
Man kann Bilder, so kleine Collagen machen.
Figure out how then you find out what it is.